Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right, today's episode of Zero Block 30, we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, a North Dakota man got a phone call saying his son, who's a Marine, had been killed on active duty. It was a scam, though. It was to steal his identity. You got to keep your head on a swivel, and I think that the people involved in this deserve the death penalty. Round number two, Chinese boots hate the military at time two. That being said, the Chinese government has certain penalties when you get out early. You can't just do it all willy-nilly in China. We lay out all of their eight penalties, and we'll vote if it's worth it or not. Round number three, the VA, and this story is a wild one. The VA may soon be required to screen doctors and nurses and not hire those who aren't qualified. Really? The VA isn't going to be allowed to hire unqualified doctors, which kind of implies that they have been able to do that. And finally, round number four, we interviewed Army Major and Green Beret Jason Van Camp about his deployments, a Mormon mission in Russia, and joining the Polar Bear Club with some old, old Russian ladies. And all of that is going to be brought to you by our good friends at SeatGeek. SeatGeek is changing the way that folks get tickets to concerts, to comedy and theater and so much more. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere in just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. I actually just used it to buy tickets to go to Ali Wong for my wife. She's going to go see Ali Wong here in San Antonio with one of her pals. It doesn't start until 10 p.m. though. So I think she's going to be struggle busting because she doesn't stay up late. 10 p.m. That's a late show start, right?
Ali Wong will pick her back up, though. We'll bring that energy level back up. She's a fantastic comedian, so.
Yeah, she's very funny.
She is very funny. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It's legitimately the easiest thing. I think they've actually made it easier, too. Like, now you can go, they have a little drop-down menu where you can go adjust to the grade. If it doesn't have, like, an 8.9 or above, I'm not buying that ticket. Just not going to do it. Straight up. Like, whenever we got the Celine Dion tickets, the Celine Dion's tickets were a 9.7 deal. You can't pass up a 9.7 deal no matter what you're getting into. And you'll have that opportunity, too, whenever you're using SeatGeek with our promo code CHAPS for $10 off on your first SeatGeek purchase. You just have to go to the app, download it, get your first purchase, use the promo code CHAPS. Connor, I'm going to allow you to explain yourself. Wait, Kate, actually, context Kate, in case people didn't see the live show, kind of explain what happened this weekend a little bit.
Well, super rewind, you and Connor had a bet going that because Connor's Army team played your UTSA football team a few months ago, and the bet was that, no, you got to explain that part because I don't understand gambling or what the fuck that means. I don't get it.
No, we'll just keep going from there. That was good. So What happened, UTSA played West Point, and the official Vegas line, I believe, was at 14 after, like, at the opening of the week. I got Connor to agree that a 24-point spread for the game. If my team lost and Army covered, then I would wear nothing but Army gear to the game. If Connor's team lost, he would sing Anchors Away at the Barstool live show. Well, Connor's team did lose, and what did you do, Connor?
Whoa, let's just play the clip. Let's just play what he did.
That means that you have to sing for us, Cons. So take it away.
All right.
This is going to hurt you, isn't it?
The Army team's a pride and dream of every heart and gray. The Army line, you'll ever find a terror in the fray. And when the team is fighting for the black and gray and gold, we're always there with song and cheer, and this is a tale we're told. The Army team, ba-da, ba-da, rah, 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 boo, oh, brave old Army team.
Are you going to do the Navy after?
That's just right.
Look at these guys, love this.
Fight on to victory, for that's the fearless Army way.
Double fisting over here.
And now you're going to do the Navy.
I mean,
you're going to do the other one.
Your podcast
partners.
What a lack of disrespect.
I know. A Lannister never pays his bet. They always pay their bets. He doesn't. Dave, what are we doing here?
I mean, obviously, he wasn't going to do it.
A man of integrity.
I don't know the song, but I will try the singing.
Okay, I'm going to say, Dan, can you sing it for us?
I don't have it, Navy.
Damn,
I mean, that's tough.
I might have to suspend him from the podcast.
That's
again.
How we're going to end this show.
I hate to do it, but I might have to. Now, I want to preface this by saying this is a big-time betting company. We follow through on our bets. Mm. I've been involved personally in lots of bets that have brought me physical pain, anguish, embarrassment, all those things. Even recently, I got my entire body waxed live on radio. Had to go out there where I was just in nothing but underwear. Mm-hmm. I have...
That was painful for many people.
Yeah, that was painful for lots of people to see. So there's been painful bets that I've gone through.
And then the 24-hour radio.
24-hour radio. Did that one. I came up to New York to do that 14-hour radio as well. Connor, on the other hand, did not do that. Why not, Cons?
You hopped up on stage in front of hundreds and hundreds, and you went against a bet that you had lost.
I mean, first of all, I made the mistake of betting on anything that had to do with the Army-Navy game. Chaps and I was okay with making the bet with Army and Chaps. I often say, people ask me like, oh, what do you think is going to happen with Army today and on various Saturdays? And I always say, I'm the worst person to ask about Army because no matter what, no matter who we're playing, no matter how many injuries we have, no matter the weather, I always believe in my heart of hearts that we can win the football game.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I should have just figured out some sort of other outcome for the UTSA Army game and just stuck it to that game because involving the Army-Navy game brings in a whole added echelon of consequence.
Because if you had sung Anchors Away up there, either way it was a lose-lose for you. You were going to get super shit on either way.
So I reached out to some confidants prior to going on stage a couple days before, and I said, you know, what should I do? And I was presented with a few different options, and I went with the option that I felt was the best move. Now, not honoring a bet, not great. However, what would have been worse was if I sang that song. And in fact, I ran into someone after the game, a very, very well-respected player, Army football player, and he said, hey, I heard you sang Anchors Away before the game. And I said, no, actually, I didn't. I ended up singing I'm Brave Old Army Team. He goes, well, that's good, because I wouldn't have talked to you if you had sang that song ever again, and I would have never forgave you for that.
Petty Army. Petty.
Hmm. Well, no, I don't think it's petty. I just think there's just
something
more.
Well, then don't make the bet. Like, that's the thing. Don't make the bet. Like, if you do it, don't make the bet. I could have said it would have been bad for me to go out there with my wife seeing me in my underwear on TV and going on stool scenes and doing all. I could have gotten out of fucking bets. Don't make the bet. If you're not going to make the bet,
I think
you're not
going to
fall through. Don't make the bet.
I think that all that pales in comparison. And I'll just say, I don't think you guys can fully appreciate what it means to be part of that rivalry. So you don't really understand how hard that would have been for me to do and how many people I would have betrayed.
Well, don't make the bet.
Either
you know
way.
What? In fact, we can go back to the tape. You made the bet. I just agreed to it. I never even came up with that idea. What does that mean?
Agreeing to the bet is part of the bet.
Yeah, but I didn't
you
make
agreed
it.
To it.
I didn't make it.
That was part of the day. Chaps, what's your any thoughts on that? Any further thoughts?
I don't know. I actually might go on the yak and discuss it with the boys because I've had lots of options in my head about what it could possibly be. I think that this is a big thing. Like just like when Davy Mouse didn't go out there and do his thing and didn't chain himself, I think it takes a step further because it's two podcasters on the same podcast. You agree to a bet, you got to do it or you don't make the bet. And you could have even approached me before and be like, hey, I'm not going to do this. This is the reason why. We could have came up with something else, and I probably would have let you out of it.
Well, you're just saying that now to make me feel worse about the situation.
No, I think what you did was bullshit. I think that we are a company that goes along with, like, hey, it's content.
I thought it was a good curveball to go up there, and everyone's expecting
definitely
me to
not.
Do one thing.
It was a
thing.
Terrible curveball.
It would have been
and
like
I think
asking
the responses
me to get up
across
there.
The internet say that.
It would have been like getting me to get up there and say that I don't like a Wawa meatball hoagie smothered in horseradish sauce. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we did thank you, Cons, because we did get to go down on the field, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And I got to bring my dad down on the field, which mm-hmm. was super cool. Even just for him as an Eagles fan to get to step and walk around in the link was super awesome. But he just, afterwards, as we're leaving, he's asking the Secret Service people, he's like, so where's the president's car? Where's this? Where's that? I was like, you can't just ask people that. He put his head directly against the Army touchdown cannon. He was like, can I get a picture of the cannon? They're like, sure. He puts his face directly on the part where the little puff comes out.
Don't want to put your head near
don't want to do
an
that.
Open cannon.
Yeah, he got
even
his picture.
Even though it's blank, yeah.
He got his picture.
I'll actually
goats,
do this. If you're listening to the show, because I know our listeners are passionate, go to our iTunes comment section, comment on the iTunes what Khan's punishment should be, and then we will tally them up. We'll tally up what the best ideas were, and then we'll decide on Friday's episode. I think that's fair.
There you
fair.
Go. But it was a great time. It was so much fun meeting all the different, I mean, active duty, veteran, civilian, whatever, all the people that came to the live show, all the people we met on the sidelines. It was just super awesome. No free ads, but somebody at Under Armour sent me this awesome Staubach. Mm-hmm. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, that's
the number 12. Perfect. Yeah, the jersey was awesome. Even Dave was like, that jersey is sick. And we shit so hard on those Navy uniforms. They looked fucking great in person.
They looked very cool. A little better in person, although the helmets still didn't match, which
were a little weird, but
it did look better live.
It was just a ton of fun, though, running around the tailgates with, again, I took my dad around as my little cameraman mm-hmm. in the beginning before we went around, and he just got such a kick out of that. It was super cool to get that experience and to get to bring him, too, but thanks to everybody who stopped by the show and who said hello to us. And I just felt like a big ball of love after that game. I had just such a ton of fun. So
credit,
Barry, another good one.
You got to tip your cap to Malcolm Perry. I'm thankful that kid's graduating. He rushed for 304 yards, which is the fifth largest amount of rushing yards for a quarterback in college football history. Yeah. So he had a record day. You got to just, you know, appreciate
he
that.
Has some sauce to him too. Whenever he would come across the outside, whenever he'd do a wide sweep and plant his left leg and go the opposite direction.
Yes.
Like, how in the fuck is his knees not like exploding when he's doing this? It's an mm-hmm. unnatural yeah. movement.
Mm-hmm. And also I got to show you guys another spot in Philly that you hated once again. Last year it was the sparkling
mural.
Yeah,
that's
wall
flying under the radar. I think Kate owes Khan's a debt of gratitude. Because this bar that we had like a group of six that was going
to
go out to eat dinner. We get in this place. This is like the most Kate thing probably of all time. We get into this place. We're looking at the reviews. They have like poutine. They had pierogies. We had been talking about pierogies earlier in the day that they're delicious. And you just don't come across them that often. We walk into this place. There is no shot that six people have ever sat together in this bar.
It was all bumper cars.
Moms.
And what?
The patrons there, it's like a chick with a shaved head sitting next to a dude with gauge earrings and lip rings and like
it's my favorite.
Super, super strange. Like
it is not a bar stool friendly crowd, to say the least. And then we go upstairs and it's these old tiny carnival ride seats. And
that's
she's
weird.
Like, oh, there's a lot of times you could sit upstairs, and we go in there. I'm like, Kate, do you know how fat I am? There is no shot I'm sitting in a carnival chair to eat fucking tater tots.
Chaps eating poutine fries in a bumper car was what I was really going for there. Mm. We figured it out. We found a good spot to go. But
I feel so terrible. They're not going to be able to meet up with us and have anywhere to sit.
It's my favorite bar in the city. Get off me. Whatever.
Yeah. Anyways. Underrated move by the bar. I ordered one of those hard seltzers. They had it on draft, which I had never seen hard seltzer on draft.
What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's and I was like, how are they going to do this? Because the ice goes into the pint glass, you know. They didn't put ice in it. It's just seltzer in a glass. Like, no ice
at all. If you
asked
them for ice, they would have put it in there.
Well, it just came out. It was full to the brim. Like, there was nothing I could do. It was just a wild place.
You could have asked for a cup of ice. You both have let me down this past weekend. My God. My goodness. Philadelphia
freedom
in your both.
Don't you try to put this on me,
Catherine.
All right, I'll say this is my final word. Chaps, having known what you said about approaching you prior to, in retrospect, I should have done that. Hand up. I should have done that. And I would have accepted a greater consequence had you let me out of that. And ultimately, I'm probably going to end up accepting a greater consequence anyway.
Oh, you better believe it, pal.
So we're going to get to the same end road, but it would have been a lot better for me and my reputation had I done it the correct way. So hand up. Although, I let my loyalties cloud my better judgment. And I will never apologize for my loyalty to the Army Football Brotherhood. However, I made a misstep, and I hope to learn from this and get better.
Fair enough.
All right, let's get on with the show. All right, round number one is one of those stories when it comes across your timeline, whenever you're on Twitter or something like that, that immediately just makes your blood fucking boil. You know, like sometimes you'll just be going through and you'll look at Facebook or wherever you get your news from and you'll read a headline and you'll think, there's no way that human depravity has dipped to this level where you could actually do it. But it happened in Fargo, North Dakota, and we're going to tell you about that story. What does it say, Kate?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, we already know a lot of crazy stuff happens up in Fargo. Wood chippers and all that jazz. So let's see what we got here. North Dakota father received a piece of horrible news that left him searching for options after a private phone number reached out to tell him that his son, a Marine, had been killed on active duty. The phone call, which turned out to be a scam, seemed legitimate until the person on the other end asked for the dad's Social Security number. They wanted to know when and where I wanted him buried and how soon. And then they would call me back, said the father, John Stotts. At first, Stotts didn't know what to do after receiving the call, which he said left him in awe. The person on the other end said they were from the United States Marine Corps and that his son had been killed during a live fire practice. I was upset, scared, frustrated, and I didn't know what to do, he told a news outlet. The father said he held off telling his wife about it because he didn't know what to say. For Stotts, whose son actually is a Marine, the call felt extremely real. Thinking it wasn't a hoax, he gave his Social Security number to the caller. At the time, his instincts and family background in the military began telling him that something just didn't feel right. I started thinking, this is kind of odd because I've seen it in the military where they come to your door, not call you on the phone, he told the Valley News. When Stotts finally told his wife about what he believed was going on, she began reaching out to family members. During one of those calls, they were able to stop worrying and finally relax. My older brother got a hold of my daughter, who just happened to say, no, he's fine, Stotts told the outlet. Following the incidents, Stotts took steps to protect his identity after he had given away his Social Security number. Now, a bit more defensive, he tells others to double-check any call they receive, no matter how believable. My first thought was, how could you believe this? But my second thought is, when you're a parent whose child is in the military,
right,
you probably go into shock right away because it's already one of the biggest fears that's constantly, whether you admit it or not, kind of living in the back of your mind for many parents. And so I think when you're shocked like that and you're just, oh, my God, of course, here's the information. Like, so, I mean, my God.
I mean, you just get told that your kid is dead and it, from and like you're thinking, well, they have to be able to verify it's me. And so how does the government do that? In taxes and so many other things, they verify you by your Social Security number. So it's not like outrageous to think for somebody. Luckily, this guy had some military ties and knows that it would come. But think about some of the backgrounds that a lot of, especially junior enlisted troops, come from. Like a lot of them come from places that maybe the education isn't the highest, you know, where you can be easily duped, like by one of these phone calls. It's just terrible.
I wouldn't say that. Who knows? This guy could be, they could be, I don't think it's the income or education.
No,
level
I'm saying, I mean, it's,
to be.
There is an education gap in some junior troops areas. Like, luckily, this guy caught on, but you could definitely see people getting away with this because people don't have, like, the education or the wisdom to see through this type of thing. That's the reason why these scammers are successful.
Well, like my parents have college. My parents both have degrees. Like, I think that maybe is a part of it, but I think for sure, whatever your education level, people get duped in all sorts of ways. But I think this is more taking advantage of the emotional toll of having a child in the military rather than education level.
Right,
but like,
you're
coming
out the gate saying something horrible.
For sure. This is like definitely a shock kind of thing. And I can see immediately, I feel like I would have checked right away and called my son and tried to get a hold of the family or something like that. But
who's to say you would have even done that? Because you get put in a situation that
so
you
shocked.
Don't know is going, you know, it's one of those situations where you don't know how you're going to react till you're in that situation. So you could say like, oh, well, I would think to call. You probably wouldn't. You'd probably fall to the floor, not know what to say or do, and then all of a sudden they're asking you questions for information, and as you said, you're just so susceptible at that moment that you would just give up anything.
Well, also, holy fuck, the people who called obviously had to know some sort of connection to the family. They have to be, like, even if it's just 6 degrees of connection to the family to know that this guy was in. But the fact that they even knew his son was in the Marines, you know what I mean, to mm-hmm. take advantage of that. But, yeah, very – we had a show one night on our Sirius show where we asked people, like, have you ever been scammed? And so many different people called in and were like, mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but yes, and this is how, and blah, blah, blah. It's so many people fall for. So I can definitely see this not being that crazy of a thing to fall for. And it makes me so sad because that's like a parent's worst nightmare. So right. I wonder, the story doesn't say whether they ever caught the scammers, but you have to be the lowest of fucking low to do something
well,
like
absolutely.
This.
Well, absolutely. And all these scammers, they probably all think it's, oh, it's a victimless crime because ultimately the son's not dead and they're just going to steal money or steal identity. And they don't even think about the ramifications of what they're doing. That's how terrible of a person they are, that they don't even care that they've put these family members in such a poor predicament. Because all they care about is getting money or stealing the identity or whatever they're going to do with that social security number.
The only other thing I'll say that I didn't know was that I know they wouldn't just give a phone call and be like, hey, your son's dead. Give us the info because we got to bury him. Like, I know that would never happen. But like, I thought, I know they come to your door if the, they come to the family's door if the person is killed overseas. But I wasn't sure what the, I mean, hearing now, I'm like, oh, of course they will always come to the door no matter mm-hmm. what. But active duty, I wasn't 110% sure like what the protocol was there. If you're stateside and it's just, like a training
it's the
accident, same.
Same. Yeah,
yeah. It's okay.
The same.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't know. But yeah, pretty awful story. Pretty awful people doing that kind of shit out there. So as Chap said, head on a swivel. My goodness.
Yeah. And I mean, in this day and age, whenever you get those about like the IRS all the time, people follow for those shits all the time. It's primarily the olds that they're going after too. Be honest.
For sure.
The olds will fall for anything. They just will.
It's the case.
I mean, that's happened to my grandparents. Yeah. Like, I've had my grandfather get tricked by a scam by telling them that they thought I was dead. So he called my dad asking for money because he thought he had, like, a connection where he could get me out of, like, being kidnapped or something like that. And my dad was like, yeah, he's fine. Like, you don't worry about it. Don't give that money.
Well, we had a lot of people who called into the radio show say, oh, yeah, my parents or my mom or my grandma got duped. And she went rushing to, like, Walmart to the, like, money exchange there. And it was the people at the Walmart money exchange who were like, ma'am, slow down a minute. I think you're being scammed. Like, don't take this money out. Don't wire this money anywhere. Hold off. Let's call a few people.
I feel like I'm pretty, like, social media savvy. Like, I can pick up on those things so that I live online, essentially. Well, I told you guys, whenever I got a big-ass check, like a return check from the VA, and I was thinking, this has got to be a joke of some sort. Like, this has got to be fake. Like, and you get so many of those fake things. Connor, you own a home based on the GI Bill, or you sold it. Mm-hmm. But the VA loan.
VA loan, yeah.
How many things do you get that say from the Department of the VA that mm-hmm. is like a refinance thing that has nothing to do with the VA?
Completely,
I mean, it's over and over and over again.
Yeah, just completely.
Oh, and they're fake?
Oh, they're completely 100% fake.
Yeah.
What?
It happens, like, hey, probably, you refinance your home. I would say once every 2 weeks, I get one of those type mm-hmm. of letters. Easily.
Holy shit. We should do a
deep
dive.
And if you don't know and you're like, oh shit, I'm going to get a point and a half taken off my interest rate. You're like, hell yeah, I'll do this because it's from the VA, but it's not.
Holy shit balls.
I got called one time and my caller ID, I have the bank that I use. I have it saved in my phone. So I got a call one time and it showed up as my bank and they started asking me questions. And I was like, wait a second. It turned out there's definitely a way to call someone.
Spoofing.
And make it look like it's a reputable phone number.
Oh, my God. I'm thinking about how dumb I am, and I'm wondering how many people have my social right now. I'm wondering how many times.
They're definitely
But that's also
evolving.
The thing. Like, if you were in the military, I'll just put my social security number on a shirt. Like, because
seriously.
So many people had it.
Yep.
All the duty rosters used to have it. Do you remember when we stopped doing that on, like, duty rosters? You used to check in for training and put down, like, your last name and your full social security.
Yeah. And your dog tags. Didn't your cat card have it?
Yep.
Or no?
Yeah, your cat card did.
Which you
your
lost
dog tag
all
did.
The time. Like, oh, my God. And plus, there was that huge security breach. Remember? I was part of it. I got breached by when the military got that huge breach.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have those security checks that whatever come through. And I could see me getting tricked by the security checker fake. Well,
so here's what I think is going to happen in this situation. The family obviously didn't get scammed, but this Marine, they got to turn him into his old company gunny because they got the Social Security card, no doubt in my mind, because he lost his dog tags. So he's going to have to go in, get a negative counseling about his dog tracks. tags being adrift. You just can't do that, folks. You got to secure your damn dog tags.
Mm.
Everybody knows that. Let's move on to round two. Round number two comes to us all the way from China. Since being enlisted into the army in September, there is a guy named Zhang who is in the Chinese army, and he has been unable to adapt himself to the military life for fearing hardships and fatigues, and thus didn't want to continue his service in the Chinese military. Despite the troops' patient exhortation, he still persisted in dropping out. He didn't want to, I think we've all seen those. Do you remember seeing people that were kicked out or they got let go and they were classified as failure to thrive?
Yeah, we had two of those in my boot camp, one gave up like first week right off the bat, and they like pushed her bunk into the middle of the squad bay, had the red lights on her all night long she went to another, I never saw her again. And then like halfway through, we had another that just was like, refused, like wouldn't get up, just would do nothing, couldn't make them do anything. So they got sepped out, I guess, because I never saw them again too. But that's like the common thing. I think one of the things that ties every branch of the military, enemy, whatever, is people hating it. It's like, seriously, young boots being like, I have made a mistake and I don't want this. But even 2 million people, 2 million in China's armed forces. And this is making like national attention there, that this guy is like, I don't want to do this anymore. I give up. I'm done.
And you would think that joining the Chinese military would be a little bit difficult. Like, I imagine they're very, very strict about it. So he probably had to have some nuts or something crazy happen to him to even say that I want out. Because government officials informed him of the penalties in detail he might face if he quit and tried to persuade him to continue his service. They even brought in his parents and all kinds of stuff to explain, like, if you get out, if you quit through your training, it is going to, we are going to fuck your life up. And they went into detail of what some of these steps that they were going through. So we're going to go through it and see if, put yourself back and like, so cons, put yourself, don't you have to decide third year in West Point if you're going to keep going?
So before you enter class first day, junior year, you have to make the decisions. Because once you go to class that first day, you're committed.
Are there people who do drop out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I started with close to 1,300 and graduated with 869.
Oh, wow. So a lot of people do. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's more than I would have thought, for sure. All right. So here's some of the things that he's not going to be able to do. He's going to be banned from going abroad, purchasing real estate, taking long flights, long distance trains or buses, and loans from or insurance services for 2 years. He's not going to be allowed to be employed as a civil servant. He's going to have a line on his social credit that says that he had a rejection of military service. Fourth, he is not going to be able to re-enter college within 2 years and cancel his qualification for higher secondary schools. Fifth, they're going to cancel his preferential treatment for servicemen. So I guess that would be like their VA loan things, and like you get kind of how we get upped if you're applying for a government job. They're going to fine him 2,800 yuan in compensation of 2,600 yuan for
he's
all the
basically
medical.
Gotta, yeah, pay back.
Yeah, he's got to pay everything back. So he's got to pay a shit ton back. And they're going to forbid him to open a business within 2 years. And finally, his refusal of finishing military service and the related punishment measures will be published by the society via network television and social media. So essentially, the final aspect is they are going to shame the shit out of him publicly, which this statement is part of that.
This is like modern day version of being put in the stockade out in the public square,
yeah,
where they put you out there and you just have to face the public for whatever you've done. For the government to be like, oh, we're about to take this to Twitter, bitch. Like, I know they don't have Twitter, but like, for them to be like, check this out. And it makes me wonder, like, of course, old bleeding heart Kate over here, like, did something happen behind the scenes to this guy that made him break and be like, no more, I'm out, I gotta get away? Like, did he think there was a threat to his life? Was there some sort of thing that we, you know, a bigger part of the story? Or did he just, you know, people from all sorts of mental backgrounds join the military too and decide that, like, actually, you know what? Not for me. I can't. So I'm interested to know what the reason was that he's no longer continuing. But again, in an army of 2 million, they're saying that this is rare to have somebody drop out. Like here,
you think?
Not so much.
Yeah. I mean, because Shane is so much of a part of that culture. I think he probably saw a retweet from Zero Block 30. Do you remember their videos when they had the Chinese army that was going out there and they had like all their they had all their gear on. They were doing all this crazy shit. He probably saw it was like, absolutely not. I'm not doing that.
First, I thought you were going to go with the modern day Scarlet Letter.
Oh, it could be like an A, a big A on his.
But secondly, I have to believe something happened to this guy that forced him to kind of like a Private Santiago type situation, because why would you want to endure all of these things that he is now facing knowing that that would happen if you were going
to
quit?
All it says is that he was unable to adapt himself to military life for fearing hardships and fatigues. But again, who knows what the real story is? I don't know. Maybe
and
he couldn't
march.
From
like the Chinese government too. So they're not
exactly
for being forthright. But speaking of Private Santiago, Cons, did you know that Private Santiago's platoon sergeant from A Few Good Men was at our tailgate?
No.
Yeah, he was one of the actors that played Private Santiago. That guy was on active duty. He was an active duty Marine, a sergeant at the time, went up and implied to be on the show, and he was the one who was chewing out Santiago in the movie.
Get out. That's pretty cool.
I didn't know that either.
I would have liked to talk to that gentleman. Shout out to him. That's a great movie to be affiliated with.
This in here, like we were talking about, I had the two gals at boot camp who were like, nope, tap out, I'm done. Do they? Is there? Because I know you sign contracts and you like do the oath. Is there? Do you get in trouble? I feel like I should know this and I don't.
It depends. It can go underneath a medical discharge too. Like if they say that you don't have the mental capacity to do it, or you're like you're suffering from depression, you could get kicked out for that. But yeah, like you could do it. Sometimes you don't get in trouble. No, like if it's a mental thing or you just can't complete it, you definitely don't get in trouble.
Because here I think they make it seem like this big, horrible, scary thing. And then when it really goes down, it's like, all right, bye. Like,
well, when you're putting sunscreen all over your face and then dipping your face into the sand and blowing as hard as you can to make sugar cookies. Sand gets in your eyes. If the drill instructors at that time came out and be like, hey, by the way, if you guys don't want to do this anymore, nothing's going to happen to you. We're just going to send you on your way, pat you on your bottom on the way out and say thanks anyways.
A lot of people would dip out. Right.
half the people would get out of there.
Yeah, the mental warfare that goes on and makes you think that something terrible is going to happen is very prevalent across the military.
You know, I wonder about that, like, North Korean military, and, like, there is no...
No.
They probably, like, kill you if you try and get out. Like, you have no option at all. You're like,
I mean, they'll call you for just about anything. You can be Kim Jong-un's our uncle, and he'll strap you to a pole and shoot artillery at you.
Well, see, so if you're in right now and you're hating life, it could be worse. Things could be worse. Hang in there. You got this.
Good point.
Thanks. All right.
But whenever you get out, things are going to be bad again.
No!
Let's move on to round three. Before we do that, before we jump into round three, if you haven't gotten out yet and you're not using Dollar Shave Club, you're wrong. I've been a Dollar Shave Club member for years. I love the cologne, whether it's Blue 202, Blue 203, or the new one, folks. There's a Blue 204 that is absolutely making the ladies go crazy. Every time I walk down the street, people are like, oh my goodness, chap smells delicious. And it's because of Blue 204. Now, and just as amazing as their shave stuff is, the Dollar Shave Club has way more stuff. It's so simple to use, especially if you travel a lot, if you're a big-time travel person. You just take one of their starter kits, throw it into your bag, and you're good. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything that you need for an amazing shave. That's the Executive Razor, the Shave Butter, the Prep Scrub, or the Post-Douche Shave. The best part is you can try it out for just $5. After that, the restock box at the regular-sized products at the regular-sized prices. Get your ultimate starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. That's dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. Let's move into round number three. Round number three, this is going to be pretty quick. So what the story is basically what we said at the top. A bipartisan group of senators on Thursday introduced a bill requiring the Department of Veteran Affairs to better vet their health care providers. By a report for federal watchdogs, found the department had a track record of hiring unqualified doctors, and that comes to us from Stripes.com. So basically what it's saying is, throughout this process of hiring tons of people, which the VA has to do, the VA does have to go through and hire a shit ton of doctors because their turnover rates are so high. Imagine some of the things that they see, too, by the way.
Oh, like these yeah.
I think about that every time I go in and do a screening, like for PTSD or traumatic brain injury. There's one lady that is a doctor there, and she has been there for 15 years, and her entire day is going through and listening to stories about people's worst day of their life, essentially.
That's terrible.
Over and over again.
That's terrible. What a toll that must take on her.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, very important to get this good care. And they found the Government Accountability Office had done an audit, and they found that a lot of times the VA had overlooked or missed disqualifying information when they hired healthcare providers. And so the senators reached out and they're like, well, what are we going to do about it? When they didn't hear back, they came up with this bill. And ultimately, it would require the VA to improve guidance on hiring. And the credentialing process will involve an audit of any provider with a questionable record and determine whether or not they're still eligible. Because these were people with questionable records and stuff before they got hired, and people that maybe weren't qualified, they were falling through the cracks and still getting hired anyway. So, yeah, I think that's pretty. They didn't respond to the letter. These senators stepped up, said, fine, we'll deal with this now. We're doing a bill. So,
I think people take for granted sometimes, and maybe we're a little just more keen to it because of our experiences with the VA. I think people see, oh, he's a doctor. He must be really good and really smart. Somebody's got to graduate last in their class at medical school, right? So, I mean, not all doctors are created equal, and that should not come as a shock to anyone. But I think oftentimes you go into a hospital, you go into the VA specifically, you're like, oh, well, he's a doctor. He'll be great.
Right.
That's not the case.
Well, you know who's probably really happy that this is happening? The good doctors at the VA, because
right.
It's the good ones who are having to pick up the slack of the shitty ones, because they go in there and they probably hear these horror stories. So they know I would bet that they know the providers that they work with who are shitty. I mean, we know, like, if you work with somebody and you know somebody's shitty. So these good doctors are probably going behind the backs of the bad doctors and trying to figure things out, too.
Well, that's crazy. In five of the healthcare facilities, officials at those hospitals were not aware that there was a policy saying don't hire healthcare providers whose credentials have been revoked or surrendered due to incompetence or misconduct. So, like,
how are you not?
It like, was like they
that
saw
that is the ult. That's the biggest Lance Corporal don't know I've ever heard.
Yeah,
like he's a surgeon. Like, you probably shouldn't hire him if his license for surgery has been removed.
Right.
Why should that even have to be a policy?
Right. Because they found, like, in one VA, they found a physician who had surrendered his physical therapy license because he just never completed his continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all sorts of things. They found a nurse who had been working at the VA since 2003 who had her nursing license revoked. So she continued her employment at the VA anyway, though, because the department found she had a license in another state. So they were like, ah, fuck it. She's fine. When really, you know, these are just, it's some of these things are annoying and small, and maybe she was a great nurse, but it's like shit you just have to do, because the more things start falling through the cracks like that, the more dangerous things get for people like us who just trust that we're going to be taken care of there and we're going to be safe there.
Now, I think that this lady that's been doing it since 2003, if she has no issues for what she's done at work, I think you got to let her stay. I mean, she's been doing it for 16 years without the proper license. And if everything's gone well, let's just let her stay. It's the same thing. I think if you escape from jail and you're out of jail for like 10 years without anything happening, I think you get to stay out.
Buddy,
regardless,
I'm driving all over Queens. Do I have my car registered? No.
No.
You know,
and
we're
it's fine. I don't think that you should get a ticket for driving an unlicensed vehicle.
No.
Unless you do something egregious while you're driving. And
thank
then
you.
It'll be a compiler. Mm-hmm. Like, same thing. Like, if you're out for 10 years, they should call off the search for you. But know that if you get caught doing something bad again, you're going to go back with a multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
So you're cool with a serial killer escaping from prison and being out for 10 years, and so long as he doesn't kill anybody else, you're good?
If he's not eating those feetin'.
Out of sight, out of mind.
I'll go on the record and I'll say yes. Cons,
okay.
We are pro.
All right, just want to be clear.
Yeah.
We are pro serial killer podcast.
Only if they're not eating.
No cannibals.
Oh, if they're cannibals?
Oh, boy. In my mind, I went straight to cannibal. Cool.
If this is problematic, we take it back. But if not, I think it's a good idea.
Then
all right,
it
let's move on to round number four, which is the interview. Here's that interview with Jason Van Camp.
Yes,
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I'm terrible with names. Here's Jason Van Camp.
All right, now on Zero Block 30, we are doing something that I have always really enjoyed in my time with the show, and that is talking to another Army football player. Jason Van Camp, Army football player here in town in Philadelphia for the Army-Navy game, and it is great to have you, Jason.
Well, thanks for having me, brother. It's my pleasure to be here.
And right before we kicked it off, we were just kind of fell into talking about our service and where we were. As a Green Beret, you probably did some pretty cool things in Iraq. You were part of the initial invasion of Iraq. So if you could just talk about that and tell me, in your words now, how is that for you? And now looking back on that with what you're doing now, how has that helped you?
And every question that we ask you is going to be as broad as absolutely possible. Yeah. All
right, well, let me start. I guess after graduation from West Point, you know, I 9/11 happened, right? And so it kind of changed my perspective of the military and my service, and I immediately wanted to do more. So I went to Ranger School, became a Ranger, and then I got stationed in Korea for my first duty station. And then right after Korea was ending, the war in Iraq kicked off. And so I joined the 101st, and we did the initial invasion. We kind of drove all the way up through the entire country, all the way to Mosul near Tal Afar Air Base, or I'm sorry, Mosul, up by the Syrian border. We went all the way up there, you know, and we kind of stayed there for about a year. And when I got back to the States, I tried out for selection in the qualification course and became a Green Beret 2.5 years later. And then my first deployment as ODA commander was in Asadiyah Jalula, which is kind of near Khanaqin on the Iranian border. And then I had another deployment as a commander, SF commander in Nasiriyah, Iraq. And so, you know, I learned a lot about leadership, you know, and about mental toughness and about grit and overcoming adversity. And I learned all that stuff at West Point, you know, but it's kind of proven in combat, proven while you're leading type A personalities on a team that want to do everything their own way and kind of managing personalities and bringing everybody together to accomplish a goal and a mission.
I have to ask, you did your first tour and then you became a Green Beret.
Yeah.
Was it because the beret is so cool looking? Mm. Was it just for the beret clout?
I wanted to become a Green Beret so I could put my hands in my pockets.
There you
nobody,
go.
There.
I don't blame you
so
there.
No sergeant majors can look at me and be like, hey, dude, hey, you know, LT, hey, captain. No, when I'm a Green Beret, the sergeant majors look at me and they're like, I can't say shit.
He's untouchable.
So,
now, you play linebacker at West Point. Do you guys have, like, a sense of pressure? Because we've talked to a lot of football players, and a lot of them end up going special forces.
Yeah.
Especially the linebacker crew.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, because you're a linebacker, you're like, I can't be a little bitch in PAO. I got to go do something extreme?
That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't describe it better myself. Like, the reason why I joined the Rangers, because my buddy Andy Reese, we were artillery guys, you know, and like at the time, most of the football players were artillery guys. Mm-hmm. And that's why I chose field artillery.
Everybody that's why I did it.
Army
too.
Football.
Right.
And so we had a ranger, artillery ranger came and talked to us, and he's like, you guys should go ranger and this, that. And Andy, my buddy, who's an Army football player, he's like, dude, I'm doing it. I'm like, shit, dude, you're doing it? I'm like, well, I got to do it too. You know, so the next day was PT, like pre-ranger PT, like 5 a.m, 2-hour smoke session. So I show up and there's like, you know, 80 guys there. Of those 80, not one of them was named Andy Reese.
So I'm like,
are you kidding me, man? So I got
this
smoked.
Is the pre-ranger PT at Fort Sill when you were there for OBC?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. If I was him, I would have hid in the bushes, waited for you to call by and be like, how are you enjoying it, idiot? Yeah.
You look very tired.
Yes.
So I couldn't quit. I started it, you know, and I went back to the barracks and I knocked on his door and he was waking up. I'm like, are you kidding me, man? I just got my ass smoked for 2.5 hours. He's like, bro, you know, 4:30 came so early, I couldn't get up. And that's how I became a Ranger, because my buddy convinced me to do it, and he didn't show up.
Man, love that. So your story, let's take it back a little bit whenever you're going to West Point. I found one aspect of your story very interesting. To be at West Point and then take a pause and go on a Mormon mission.
Yeah.
Is that common? I mean, it can't be common, but were you going to your coaches knowing that you're going into a junior year where you're starting to get some leadership on the team, and you got to check out for 2 full years. I can't imagine that they were like, hell yeah, let's do this.
It was a tough situation all around. You know, like growing up, I kind of knew I wanted to do this, you know. And when I was getting recruited, there was a guy, Greg Gregory, was offensive coordinator. He's the guy that recruited me. And I told him, hey, this is kind of my plan. And he at the time was like, okay, great. What we want to do is we'll do something different. We've never done this before. We'll have you come in as a freshman, and then you go through your sophomore first half, so the fall semester and the fall season, and then you can leave. Thereby, when you come back, you can kind of get ready during spring ball for the following season. And so that's what I did. I was, from what I understand, I was only the second guy ever to kind of join Army football, go on a mission, and come back.
And you, so you got to come back and be like, oh, you guys didn't do a deployment yet? I already did my own kickoff.
Where did you do your mission at?
It was kind of like that, I guess. I went to St. Petersburg, Russia.
Yeah. Oh,
so wow. I loved every second of it. Not only was I in St. Petersburg, but I was also in a place called Petrozavodsk, which was kind of up north. And they've got white nights there, man. So, you know, in the summertime, you know, it's light out till about 2 a.m. And then it gets dark for about 3 hours and then light again. But in the wintertime, it's the opposite. It's only there's only the sun out for about 3 or 4 hours.
Wow.
And I bet they love that, like in the Special Forces community, that you have the ability to speak Russian and speak it fluently because you had been there for so long. I think that would be a great asset for you.
It was a tremendous asset. I was a 3-3 guy, so in the DLPT, the highest score you can get is like a 3-3, you know. Maybe it's a 3-3-3 now with the listening and everything, but at the time it was listening and writing is kind of what they evaluated you on. And so I was like a perfect score in Russian. I spoke fluently at the time. Right now, I don't. Give me 2.5 months, and I could. And so during the Q course.
So you can't just
course,
switch over right now and just start.
I can speak a little bit right now for you if you wanted to. But I'll
maybe
tell you
we'll
one
get
thing
a download,
say,
subscribe, and review Zero Blog 30 Russian before you leave.
Here's an easy one. Yellow, blue bus. Think about that. Yellow, a yellow, blue bus, and you're saying, I love you all.
Oh,
that's how
yellow, blue bless.
Yellow, blue bless.
Yeah. We still can't say yellow, blue bless. Yeah. Wow.
That's nice. But did you, I mean, that's quite a challenge, though, because I mean, West Point is a challenge just to do it in 47 months.
Yeah.
So to take a pause and then come back, what was that like?
So it was very difficult, and I didn't realize how difficult it would be.
Especially when you then see all your buddies that are out there already in the Army, already having thrown their hat in the air.
Exactly. Well, I came back just in time to see them do that.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
And so for me, when I left, I was kind of like, thank God, I'm out of here. Like, I can take a break from West Point. This place sucks. It was so hard, you know. But at the same time, I didn't realize how difficult it would be for my Army football career. And then also when I got back, I was so excited to see my buddies, you know. I was like getting excited and we sat down at core squad tables. And honestly, that was a great day for me because I was like going around like subtly saying, hey, what's up, guys? And some of the guys were like, hey, what's up, dude? And then they're like, oh, shit, Van Camp, man, when'd you come back? Like, good to see you. And like everyone was excited and I was excited. And that night, like they're like, come out to the Firsty Club. And I was like, hell yeah. So I went to the Firsty Club with the guys. I was originally, a second semester sophomore officially.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Firsty Club with all my buddies, you know, that was former classmates with. Unfortunately, some guys in my company that were once my plebes are now like upperclassmen for me. They saw me and got me in trouble.
God, I didn't even think about that. Like
and I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
And so it was such a huge ego. Like I had to swallow my ego. And like people that I used to haze are now like, oh, I'm going to get Van Camp back. But I don't want to say that I was like a hazer or anything like that.
Right.
I'm just saying that.
No, we'll write
that down. Came back as a yuck.
I came back as a yuck. Second semester yuck.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah, it was tough, man.
So, but I'm sure that that kind of leadership lesson, like learning how to be humble and like have a little bit of humility, probably ended up serving you really well moving forward.
Yeah, it really did. And that's one of the hardest things you got to learn in life is humility. You know, and if you can learn that, you can go far in life. Swallowing your pride, swallowing your ego. And that was a big slice of humble pie for me when I came back as a second semester yuck. All my buddies were graduating, becoming officers, doing great things. And it seemed like they had all kind of grown up quite a bit. And not to say I hadn't grown up, but they had grown up quite a bit. And it was kind of weird to see that.
Moving back into some of your deployments that you did, like I talk about that there's usually a story or two that sticks out in my mind of special stories that you don't really get to talk about because usually people don't give a shit, but we give a shit. So we'll give you the opportunity. Do you have anything that sticks out for you? Like that this, I learned something incredible here while I was in Iraq.
I think there's a lot. There's so much, you know? And for me, one of the things that I learned was getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. You know, that's really the only way you can grow and you can improve. You know, and you can be a better person. Like, stop doing the things that are comfortable for you, that you like. voluntarily choose to be uncomfortable. You know, deliberately place yourself in those positions, because once you do, like, you can really start to grow and you can be a better person. You know, at West Point, it was very difficult for me. It was a hard 4 years. It wasn't the best fit for me, you know, like, but I stuck it out. I'm not a quitter. I wanted to go through it all. And there were times, you know, in combat, where, even at Ranger School in the Q course, I thought to myself, at least I'm not at West Point right now. You know?
Yeah. Are there any times, though, when you're uncomfortable, when it is ultimately negative?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's plenty
of
times.
Welcome to my life, Cons. Sheesh. It's the whole thing.
There's plenty of times when, you know, discomfort is a bad thing, and you need to get out of there. You know, we have a company called Mission 60, and one of the scientists on our team, Petra, you know, we were talking about safe spaces. You know, and I was violently against safe spaces. I was like, listen, it's a bad thing. You shouldn't be in a safe space. Like, we're teaching our children, the society, indignation and victimhood. Like, let's get out of there. And her experiences, she's like in the LGBTQ community, and she was like telling me, like, listen, it's a good thing and here's why. And we kind of came to the conclusion, like, we kind of talked, we had a dialogue, we said, listen, if you're in a position where you need to be in a safe space, that's kind of like where you start your growth process. Okay, we'll start there, stay in there for the least amount of time as you possibly can, get yourself out, get your ass out of that safe space, and have those the dialogues, have the conversations, take the arrows, take the bullets, you know, be out there, be vulnerable, put yourself in this uncomfortable position, because that's the only way you can grow as a person and we can grow as a society.
Mm. And what is that organization? How did you get involved with it, and how did it all come to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was medically retired from the military. My last deployment was a JSET to Mali, Africa. And I got really sick and I came down with a seizure disorder.
Oh, wow.
And so I started having these epileptic, you know, tonic-clonic seizures, and one thing led to the next. And all of a sudden, you know, like, my chain of command was like, hey, listen, man, like, you know, you can't jump out of airplanes. You can't shoot weapons. We can't deploy you. Hell, you can't even drive yourself to work. Like,
you can't really be a Green Beret.
You can't do anything.
And
you
that,
you
know? Green Beret, that has got to be stuff. Crushing for somebody with football background, multiple deployments. You're a major at the time, right? Like,
and I was honestly, I was fast track, and I was, you know, the group assistant S3, which is one of the jobs that you want. And, you know, I was going to the next thing, and I had a great, so far so good, it was going well, and I was enjoying myself. I loved the military and I loved SF, but I had to kind of understand that my identity is no longer going to be as an SF officer. And I think that's one of the hardest things you can do as a person, is to change your identity. Mm. And for me, somebody said, listen, you aren't an SF officer, isn't who you are. It's just what you did. Mm-hmm. Now figure out who you are as a person. And I asked myself the same question that all of us ask when we leave the military. Now what? What am I going to do with myself? Mm-hmm. And my mother always told me, she's like, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And my friends were a lot of them Army football players. And I looked around and I said, well, there's a lot of guys doing medical sales. I don't really want to do that. God bless them. You guys make a lot of money. Have fun doing that. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But there's a lot of guys that were starting their own businesses. Mm-hmm. And they were just crushing it. Like, millionaires already by the time, like, 30, 35 years old. Just absolutely amazing guys. Friends of mine. And I said, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it as well. And so I started a business. I had an idea for a leadership consulting business. I guess, you know, it's not an original idea by any stretch of the imagination, but I wanted to do that because I was passionate about that and I was knowledgeable about that. Mm-hmm. And I recruited some of my old commanders, who I thought were just the most amazing leaders, and some of my old subordinates, guys that worked for me.
Any of those guys that jump you in seniority from West Point?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Some of those guys, absolutely. But guys that I thought, and girls, you know, if we could put my kids in a room with these people and just kind of soak up everything that they are, that would be something valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And so we created Mission 60, and it's a leadership consulting firm. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Our first client was the New York Jets of all teams, you know, like being naive and not knowing how business worked, you know, and knowing that I loved football and I wanted to be around football. I went on Google and I just found a list of numbers for NFL teams. And I started cold calling alphabetically, you know.
Wow, cold call to the NFL is not
Arizona,
easy.
Arizona Cardinals, Atlanta Falcons, yeah. Buffalo Bills.
Who needs help the most? New York, you know, Jets.
That's
first
it.
Call.
That's it. Well, I got all the way down to the Jets.
And I got two options. One, you could plug me in as the mic. Two.
God, I wish I would have said that. Still, my dream is to maybe one day run down on kickoff team somehow.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't think that's going to happen. But we called the Jets and they said, listen, you know, I like your enthusiasm. You know, want you to know we're not hiring you by any stretch of the imagination, but we can let you come up here and pitch to the staff and, you know, give you an opportunity. And I said, take it. We got it. Thank you. Done. We're going. We had to pay for our own flights and travel and lodging and the whole thing. We go up there and I brought two of my guys and I said to myself, you know what? If we get this opportunity, we're going to get it. Mm. And we pitched to Rex Ryan and Mike Tannenbaum and the staff up there. And after we were done, they said, you know, we never thought we'd say this to you, but congratulations. You got the contract. And we worked with them for the whole year. Yeah. And that kind of put us on the map.
And what did that work entail?
Yeah.
So we did speaking with the team. Mm-hmm. We did workshops with the team. And we did a few big events. And one of them was kind of a team building leadership assessment. So we call it an intangibles assessment. Mm-hmm. So Rex Ryan at the time, you know, he, you know, kind of brash, really cool, you know, fiery coach, and he was really vulnerable to me. And he's like, Jason, listen, you know, last year we had some problems. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a guy on the team, Captain Santonio Holmes, and last game of the season, you know, he got thrown out of the huddle by the offensive line. You know, the offensive line refused to allow him in a game.
I remember that.
You know, and he's like, I empowered him to be the captain, and I think I know what's going on in this team, but clearly I don't. I think I've lost the pulse of the team. Could you help me understand what that looks like? Tell me who I should empower. Tell me who the guys on the team are that I should trust. Who are the guys that are going to be there for me in the fourth quarter when the chips are down, or maybe when we're on a three-game losing streak? Who are the guys that are going to quit, and who are the guys that are going to step up and do something about it? Mm-hmm. And we said, okay. And so we created this program where we kind of took our experiences in combat, and we went to Woody Johnson's farm, which is out there in New Jersey, and we kind of put together a series of events. And the first event was what we call the Wounded Warrior Ambush Exercise. So we tell the players, you know, you're coming out and you're going to do a military exercise. They have no idea what's going on. They put together two teams, and we kind of take them out in the woods. And you'd be shocked to learn that a lot of these guys have never been in the woods before in their entire lives.
I believe that. A lot of these guys come from inner city, so it's not surprising.
So they're walking in the woods, and they're like, oh, my God, there's some trees. I think I saw a squirrel. And it's like, dude, this is crazy. They've never been in the woods. And we kind of link them up with, like, some mock role-playing SF operators. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We put kit on them. We give them some weapons. We let them test fire the weapons, break up into teams, select the captain. And then they're supposed to go link up with a CIA operative, right? And we give them a picture of the CIA operative and give them a challenge and a password. And they think this is the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And they're slowly walking through the woods and they don't know what to expect. And all of a sudden there's a loud explosion. A bomb goes off, some of our pyrotechnics, and they see the CIA guy kind of like on the ground. And so as they run up to him, they get ambushed by my operators in the wood line. And mm-hmm. so we have, you know, 240s.
At least everybody's strong enough to carry the litter if they need to.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, like we got real weapons, but blanks and everything, right. And airsoft guns, they're firing at them. They're getting pelted. But when they get to the CIA operative, what they don't know is he's actually a wounded warrior. You know, he's a guy that's double amputee, triple amputee, and we have blood all over him. And so when they get to this guy, you know, they realize, oh shit, this is real. Like this guy's actually missing arms and legs. And the guy is on the ground as a role player, and he's like, help me. You know, he's acting just as he did when he was injured in combat mm-hmm. in real time.
Gosh.
And so you get to see how people react. You get to see who are the guys that step up and be leaders and the guys that don't. And the guy, what you really understand about yourself is, you know, you fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those three responses. And when you get that emotional response from guys, then you start to see things starting to seep in. And that's just kind of the initial shock event that we do, and then from there we do a lot of really scientifically proven in-depth role-playing exercises that we learned in the Q course and other places.
We should all do that one time.
Yeah, I know.
I'd love for you guys to do that.
I'd love to do it. That would be awesome. But there's one caveat. Sure. I've made a promise to our listeners that I'll never run. So right. Is that going to be an issue?
Could you
speed walk,
jog a little?
No,
no, he won't jog. He won't. Yeah.
I can move at like a brisk pace. Like I can walk at a brisk pace, but that's about it. Honestly,
I'll take brisk, man.
Okay.
I'll run with
love
that.
It. All right, good.
Strong stride.
All right. So we also know that you're involved with a lot of different organizations of kickstarting some smaller veteran-owned businesses. Yeah. So we have an idea for you.
Okay.
All right. So normally in the veteran community, I'm sure you've seen it, there's a million different coffee companies, right?
Like, yeah.
There's tons of different veteran organizations that own coffee companies. What about ZBT, T-E-A?
Okay.
So we start a tea company.
Right.
Interesting.
And then we all become millionaires.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, with your marketing outreach, it's right. already $1 million idea.
Right. So we put it out there. We have ZBT, and it says not for boots.
Like but each one, each tea bag paper has something your drill instructor would yell at you to motivate you to keep going.
Oh, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Like, you're stupid.
Negative reinforcement.
Right, negative reinforcement.
So
yes.
You drink
military.
Your tea and you think, no, I'm not. And then you go out and
right.
crush it out.
Go out and prove them wrong. That's the whole.
Or you're so comfortable with that, that people say negative things to you, you're like, okay, I feel good today. I can go do something great.
Exposure
therapy,
basically. I take a sip,
basically. I say, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I live in Salt Lake City, and that's where Black Rifle Coffee Company is, and mm-hmm. I know those guys pretty well. And Jeff Kirkham, who's kind of the silent majority owner in the company, he's an absolute stud, great friend of mine. And they've got office space there. They've got
ZBT.
Space.
Mm-hmm. ZBT. That could be cool. And when you do your gossip, what's the tea?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the latest mm-hmm. in your unit?
I hear a lot of ideas. That's a brilliant one.
Thank you.
But what we're alluding to is Warrior Rising is the organization that you started. And you had already started Mission 60.
Yeah.
What made you say, all right, you know what? I got to go start this other organization to go help all these veterans who are trying to get their businesses off the ground?
Deliberate discomfort, man. I don't know why I do this to myself, you know, but I do. It's like I'm selfish about being selfless. And what I really love doing is helping people, mm-hmm. you know, especially the veteran community, because they're my people, you know. And when I see guys that are millionaires and doing great things and crushing it, I want other people to be on that level as well, you know. And so,
so you're going to find somebody to give us $1 million. That would be sick.
Yeah, all right. I like this.
Listen.
What are some
with that idea you just told me about, the ZBTT.
Yeah.
I can get you $1 million for that
bag.
Idea.
Oh, I love
Let's
it. Yeah.
Go.
Let's
Let
go.
Go.
I've got millionaires. We've got all sorts of investors in my network that would love. I'm absolutely 100% serious about this, but yeah.
We're rich. We did it. That was so easy.
Can we get a couple of bucks in the back?
You got to do the work, man.
As a little bit.
We'll do the work.
Well, don't speak for me.
Yeah. I'm out. I'm sorry. I'm out.
What is it about veterans that they have this propensity to start businesses?
So not every veteran is created equal, right? And just want to throw that out there. But there's a lot of veterans that kind of get this entrepreneurial mindset that understand, like, okay, there is a goal that I need to accomplish, and this is kind of the checklist, or this is kind of the pattern, the way in order for me to accomplish this goal, you know, especially in the Special Operations Forces community. I think that's a very much kind of that unconventional mindset that you are taught. Mm-hmm. Like, that really makes a lot of sense. And, you know, back to that question you were asking me, how did this start? You know, we were at Mission 60 training the Oakland Raiders, mm-hmm. and the event was over, and I bring out a lot of wounded guys on my team, and they love being out on the team, you know, because it's cathartic for them to share their story, and it's powerful for the client to hear their stories about overcoming adversity and resiliency. And after the event was over, I'm an officer, man. It's kind of, I'm naturally inclined. It's been, it's been internalized for me to make sure the guys are taken care of. And so I asked them, hey, how are things going? And they said, you know, Jay, we got a large disability check from the government. And I was like, awesome. You know, another guy was like, hey, I go hunting and fishing all the time. There are charities that take us out. I'm like, awesome. Another guy, Tommy Parker, he's a triple amputee Marine. You know, he's like, hey, I live in Montana. Someone just, you know, a charity just built a handicap accessible home for me, $500,000. I was like, man, that's great. You know, and guys were like, you know, quiet. And I was like, what's up? And they're like, it's not awesome at all, man. I'm like, well, sounds pretty good to me. What's up? And they're like, listen, you know, we joined the military for a reason. You know, we want to serve other people. We want to do more with our lives. We want to have a purpose, you know. And I go hunting and fishing. Yeah, I have a great time. I come back home. Nothing's changed for me. Mm. You know, I appreciate people taking me out, but what does it really do for me? And, you know, another guy was like, my home. You know, Tommy's like, my home. You know, I kind of regret living here, to be honest with you. You know, I didn't put any skin in the game. I don't feel like I did anything to deserve living in this home. you know, and I honestly spend most of my time outside on my front porch just kind of looking at my home because I don't want to go inside, you know, and I spend all my time smoking weed all day long, man, because I don't want to go inside. And he's like, that's not me. And I speak to these guys just like I would before they got injured because, you know, that's how they want to be treated. And I said, what are you going to do about it? And they said, well, Jay, it comes down to the purpose like we talked about. Like, how do we find that? What did you do to find purpose when you left the military? And I was like, man, I don't know if I've ever thought about my purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess when I started a business, I found my purpose again. You know, it gives me a chance to make money for my company, for my team. I get to add value to the clients. I get to bring you guys back on the team. We get to have a great time. You know, I guess, you know, whether or not it succeeds or fails, it's on my shoulders. I guess that's my purpose. And they said, we want to do the exact same thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, we want to start a business. And I was like, okay, we'll start a business. You know, and we can talk more about that later. But
it wasn't tea, was it?
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah.
There are a
only
lot of
room
t-shirt,
for one in this town.
And I've noticed a couple times you've mentioned that your idea of serving and still being there, being an officer for the people that were below you. I had a story that happened today, and I didn't say anything about it while we were at breakfast, breakfast, lunch, but I wanted to bring it up to you now. Our food got sat down at the table, and Connor ate first before anybody else started eating.
He did.
I don't know.
I don't know how. It was painful.
They sat his steak down first, and he just dived right in.
No, that's before.
We were so
that
hungry.
Was unbelievable.
It made me so sad. It made me so sad. I was very
Kate.
Sad. He did. He put the whole steak in his mouth.
Whatever.
It was unbelievable.
Whatever.
So it's kind of like an incubator for small businesses, for veterans starting small businesses. Is that how you would describe it in a nutshell?
That was kind of the idea, you know, and kind of back to that conversation I had with the guys, you know, they were telling me their business ideas, and surprisingly, they all had ideas. And as I listened to them all, and there were probably 20 guys there, and I listened to them and I realized, hey, most of these ideas are horrible. These are terrible.
Yeah.
You know, these are bad ideas, guys. And I was like, hey, listen, don't do that, man, because of this, that, and the other thing. And they were thanking me. And I realized, hey, I'm adding value to this guy because he would have spent his life savings, which isn't much. And he would have spent years of his life pursuing this goal. And I'm giving him really good feedback on why he shouldn't do this, do something else. But some guys had really good ideas. Mm-hmm. And I said, you should do that. And they said, okay, great. Well, here's what we're going to do. You're going to be $50,000. You're going to move to Tampa Bay. We're going to start this together. And they start going through this whole list. And I'm like, no, Like, I'm not moving to Tampa. I'm not giving you 50. And they're like, why? You just said it was a good idea. I'm like, well, show me your business plan. Show me your pro forma. Show me your operating agreement, your SWOT analysis. And they just kind of looked at me like, dude, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm like, do you know what that is? And they're like, no. They're like, do you have that? I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, can you give it to me and I just copy it? I'm like, no, like that's not how it works, guys. You can't just copy
it. It's not an NCOR report.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
Can't put a drill stamp on this thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you kind of guide them through the process, and in a nutshell, guide them through the process, kind of help consult with them and show them the ropes and teach them the ropes. And then they're empowered to do it for other veterans after they learn the ropes. Is that the...
That's right, in a nutshell. Yeah. So we've gone through a few iterations of the company. So where we landed now is this. We've created... an online training course called the Warrior Academy, and it's 40 videos. It follows the military operations order. And so we translated the MDM, the military decision-making process, into an operations order, or I'm sorry, into a business model. And so guys in the military can understand, without having to go get an MBA, what they need to do in order to create a business plan. Next, we, as they go through this pipeline, they get a mentor. And so somebody who's been successful in whatever industry they're trying to start a business in will team up with them, and they create a go-to-market strategy. Next, we give them financial assistance, grants, loans, or investments. In the past, you know, we had small numbers, and so we would give a lot of money out to individuals. But as we've grown, you know, we're almost getting 40 applicants a week now.
Wow.
We've had
amazing.
To go more towards the investment route. And then finally, community. And that's something we started this year. And we realized it's not just about purpose. It's also about community. And so we have chapters, we call them platoons, in 12 locations in the country, and we want to have one in each state in 2020.
That's great. And that's where can people find this?
So warriorrising.org is where you can find out about Warrior Rising and how to start a business. And you apply, and you'll get a personal call from one of our intake specialists within a week. And they'll just talk you through your process, your plan, where you're at, what you got going on. And then they'll assign you whether or not you have to go through Warrior Academy or just go right to get a mentor. Mm-hmm. So I think what separates us, a few things. One, we have that personal touch. You know, we have an intimate conversation with you. Two, we have Warrior Academy, robust 40 video curriculum. You know, and three, we give financial assistance to guys.
And it's for enlisted and officer. It's for anybody.
It's not only for all veterans, but their immediate family members as well.
Wow.
So yeah, spouses great. And brothers, sisters, fathers, mm-hmm. mothers.
That's awesome.
Very, so, very yeah. cool.
You started two businesses, and then somewhere in between starting those two businesses, you wrote a book.
Yeah.
What was that book?
Boy, I'm feeling like a real piece of crap over here. I'm a big old do-nothing.
You should not.
Yeah. How's your podcast doing?
Yeah, how's your podcast?
No podcast. I have no talent. I really don't. I just try really hard. That's it, you know. And I wrote a book called Deliberate Discomfort. My team and I kind of wrote this book together. Mm-hmm. And we wrote it, or I guess I wrote it starting the summer of last year. And it's been about a year writing it. And what it does, it kind of shares my journey. As a Green Beret, so I go talk to my company commander in Chapter 1, mm-hmm. and he sits me down and he says, Jason, listen, in order for you to succeed as a Green Beret, you know, I need you to understand how we operate as a company. In order to do that, I want you to talk to these people in the company and get an understanding of what they're like, what motivates them, how they think, and how they've been successful in combat. And once you've talked to these people, come back and talk to me, and I'll assign you a team. And so each chapter is about me talking to a different guy on my Mission 60 team. I've got two Medal of Honor recipients, you know, mm-hmm. Flo Groberg, who tackled a suicide bomber, mm-hmm. and Leroy Petrie, who threw a grenade, blew his arm off, you know, put a tourniquet on his right arm, switched his rifle from his right to his left, kept fighting, you know, took down the Taliban, got his guys who were injured by a grenade to safety to the helicopter. Unbelievable stuff. I've got a guy that I speak to that was with me in 10th group that was a Green Beret, a Navy SEAL, and an Army Ranger. He did all
three.
That's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, wow. He's got a PhD in embracing the suck, you know?
Yeah.
And so what we do is we kind of go through these experiences and we talk about the lessons learned. And then following that, we have a scientist on my team that takes those experiences, those lessons, breaks them down into very relatable and digestible practical application. So right. What, now what? And then finally, I come in also as a business guy and say, listen, we've worked with a lot of celebrity clients, and these are the lessons that we've learned from these clients based on the theme of the chapter.
Wow.
That's fascinating. Good.
So it's fun. You
name
guys
of the
really
website one
it.
More time and name of the book.
So the website is mission60.com.
Okay.
And the book is Deliberate Discomfort, and you can order it on Amazon or wherever books are sold right now.
There awesome. I think maybe I need to check that out.
Yeah. Audiobook.
Audiobook. Yeah. Do you need a voice for the audiobook?
We do.
Because I do a good Hagrid. If you want like an authoritative voice like that to read the book, I'm available. See.
We get all three of you to read like different
different chapters. Yeah.
Different chapters.
I could do Winnie the Pooh.
Let me hear it.
Oh, we need a little bit of uncomfort.
Yeah, that may be very uncomfortable. Yes, that's perfect.
That's a terrifying Winnie the Pooh.
Did you ever think you'd wind up in a hotel room in Philly with a grown man talking to you in a Winnie the Pooh voice?
Yes, I have.
Who hasn't? Yeah. I can Winnie the Pooh my shirt right now if we need to.
Yeah, good.
All right, Jason. Jason, thank you so much for joining us, my man. Appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's been awesome. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Proud to call you a brother, man. So a little post-interview question.
Okay.
Tell us about the story about the polar plunge in Russia.
So what motivates me is stories, epic stories, epic experiences. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Russia, I was in that one city I mentioned to you earlier, Petrozavodsk, and it's really far up north. And kind of a tradition in the missionary culture is once you've been there a year, so like the halfway mark, you're supposed to do something. And I wanted to do something that couldn't be topped. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let's do something epic. And so I was thinking about what I would do for about a month. I was like looking around, and where I lived, there was a lake, and it was completely frozen. And there was a small section in the lake where I saw these old grandmas. They're called babushkas. And they were going out there with big sticks, and they were just like breaking up the ice, and they were just jumping in the lake and
swimming
around.
So your hardcore thing is something that old ladies did.
Well, I thought to myself, I guess so, yeah. You're looking at it like that, it's pretty pathetic. But I looked at him, I was like, I want to jump in that lake. I want to see what that's like, that polar bear club, you know? Mm-hmm. So I told my buddy Luke, you know, he and I came in at the same time, so it was his halfway mark as well. I'm like, hey, man, we're going to go jump in the lake and we're going to swim around for our halfway mark. And he's like, okay, but I'm telling you, people can do that. So we need to do something bigger. I'm like, what are you suggesting? What do you want to do? And he's like, we got to do it naked. And I was like, fine, let's do it naked.
Classic, you know? Mormon stuff, just naked goofing.
Two naked dudes in the lake. So we go out there, and it was February, and it was negative 14 at that on that day, which was warm because at times it did get it to negative 40, which is the same temperature in Celsius and Fahrenheit, negative 40.
Yeah.
So we go out there with sticks, and we have some cameras, you know, and like everyone's laughing at us, whatever. We break the ice. We're taking our clothes off. The ice is naked now. The ice is now frozen over again, so we have to break it again. Wow.
And that's not a good image when you're naked.
No, that's tough.
Your butt cheeks are just going all over the place. Yeah. Not a good look.
It's not a good look at all. And so I was kind of trying to pump myself up, like, okay, here we go. And my buddy just went for it. He just jumped in. And so kind of like with Andy Reese, like, I got to do it too. So I jumped in and I went all the way to the bottom. It wasn't super deep. I went all the way to the bottom. And I remember just like, feeling like knives sticking out of every pore in my body, my eyeballs on fire. Just like, oh my God, like I gotta get out of here or I'm gonna die. And so I was in there for maybe 4 seconds tops, and I jumped off the bottom of the lake, and I feel like, honestly, I completely jumped out of the water and onto the ice, and it just like hit me. I was in shock, and I started like sprinting, almost kind of to make the guys laugh, but also to get warm.
Yep.
And so I kind of started sprinting around, and I looked back at the hole where in the lake, and my buddy Luke was having a hard time getting out.
Oh.
And so he was like frozen. He was like putting his arm out, and they were trying to drag him out. And so I drug him out, and he was like basically unresponsive.
Oh my gosh.
Like he was like in the hurt box. And so I remember these other missionaries that were there taking pictures. They were like trying to put his underwear on for him, you know, and like, and I was like, we got to get out of here. And so I grabbed him and like by his shoulder, and like, I started running with him trying to get his feet moving. And we ran all the way across the lake into this. It was a clock shop of all things. We ran into this clock shop to get warm.
Surprise.
Two half naked dudes fall on the floor of this clock shop. And then the Russian guys, you know, what the hell are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. Just getting warm, man. Yeah. And so
Here's some vodka.
That's all they do there, too, man. Yeah. So that was the story. It was a great experience. Luke's still alive, thank God.
Phew.
One of my great friends, still to this day. And that was your story
of why your soldiers should do ORM sheets before they go out on Libo?
It'll save your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
We need to think things through. You want them to be like Luke, naked at a clock shop. All right, man. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jason for coming on the show again. We appreciate it. Interesting fella. Interesting life. 2 years away from West Point and then going to 2 years in Russia and then coming back. That would be difficult.
Yes. Difficult. I would have been, if that had been me, I would have been one of the ones that dropped out.
Yeah.
Unless I was in China.
Yeah, because he could have.
In which case,
right? Like, he could have gone there and he could have probably went to BYU and tried to play football at BYU or something.
Correct. Yeah. He had no obligation to return to school. So he did that all on his own.
Or he could have opened a Russian clock shop at the edge of a beautiful lake. You know, he could have done that too.
He was talking about being even further north of what he said, St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. right? So he's basically in Siberia.
More or less.
He's taking a trip to Siberia and be like, I love it here.
Yeah. Wild.
What a
also,
wild boy.
He looked like somebody that if I was running full speed and he didn't even know I was coming and I ran into him, I would be the one who got hurt still.
Yeah.
Like, solid fella.
Still pretty solid.
Indeed.
Even, you put him in the gym for a couple months and I think he would have made a fantastic Gaston.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
My, what a guy.
We should have pressed him a little more into speaking a bunch of different languages.
I know. Smart fella. Mm. I got nothing.
No.
All right, let's move into save rounds, alibis. We'll start with you, Catherine.
The weather outside. No, okay. I had my family cookie swap yesterday, and I finally got hit
I've been waiting all December. I'm like, when's the Christmas spirit going to hit? Finally yesterday. So I was listening to my holiday tunes on the train. Mm-hmm. I was eating a whole big old Ziploc bag full of cookies from the cookie exchange.
What was the best cookie?
Ooh, my Aunt Rita made this delightful. It's like a shortbread with chocolate chunks in it, but a crispy, salty edge to it somehow, which doesn't, it was a wild card. But it was fantastic. I ate them all already.
Everybody's mind is blown. She pulls out the cookie. Everybody's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah, everybody lost their minds. No one could believe it. The haters were sick. I ate a shit ton of Scrapple yesterday. We had a whole big old, I'll be honest, waiting for
a big old dumperoon.
Well, something's going to happen today. Anyway, I ate a lot of syrup-soaked Scrapple yesterday, a ton of bacon, French toast casserole. Really just got me in the spirit. So the Eagles won. Everything's coming up, Kate, today.
All right.
Feeling good. Holiday vibes.
Good stuff.
Thanks. That's
Cons?
It.
Yeah, I just want to mention today as we're recording, it's the anniversary of the start of the Battle of the Bulge. And I mean, you think about what those gentlemen and soldiers did in that forest and the cold weather they had to deal with and all the bravery that they exuded while they were there is just really, really tremendous. So if you don't know about the Battle of the Bulge, go get yourself educated because it's very impressive.
There we go. Cons? Or nope, Bren?
Wednesday is the Barstool Christmas party. Did you guys have Christmas parties in the barracks or wherever you guys were deployed at? Do you have any Christmas
memories? Oh, good
Christmas
question.
Party memories. Not so much Christmas, day of Christmas memories, but maybe like Christmas party with your battle buddies kind of stuff.
Oh, we
getting
had
reckless with your battle buddies.
The worst.
And you know, we'll actually put this one out on ZBT's Twitter this week so we can get good ones for a Friday show because I think that'll be a good topic.
Okay. Cool. Ahead, Kate. All right. Well, do you want me to answer it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do
I was going to say
for next
every
week
year there was like a battalion Christmas party or holiday party, and it was always like in the Motor T building in the huge garage. They would clear it out, and none of the lower enlisted without families wanted to be there because we were the ones who got voluntold to like dress up like elves and entertain all the kids and like do all the dumb shit. And you were the ones cleaning and handing out food, and like it was never for you to enjoy. It was always for like the family, which whatever, that's great. But
so is that the angle we should take on social?
Kate says, oh, that's great, whatever. I'm just real bitter about it.
I'm still mad. I never got to get a present.
So you think we'll get better responses with like, what's the worst thing you had to do for the Christmas party? Dressing up like an elf, it sounds just so demeaning.
A little dignity killing, the usual. Yeah. But no, we were always, a lot of people went away on leave and stuff during the holidays, so it wasn't like you're rip-roaring at the barracks and stuff, but I'm sure some people who stayed behind have stories of goofing.
Definitely. I always felt bad for the people who had to set those up and like design it and like put in all this effort, brief the commander about what was going to happen, and then when you get there, no one wants to be there.
Right. Nope. Everybody hates it. Even the families don't want to fucking go to this thing. Nobody wants to go to the holiday party.
Can I do a spoiler Santa? Sure. Whatever, because my dad was in the Navy and he worked in on a plane, so we would always have these squadron style Christmas parties. And at the time, I remember being really young and not knowing what the deal with Santa Claus was. Like, I thought Santa was super real. If you're having kids listen, spoiler alert coming up. So all the kids, the parents would bring in a wrap present to put underneath the squadron Christmas tree for Santa to give out each one of the kids who's in the squadron. Well, like the captain's kids, the 06, would end up getting like a Nintendo or a Sega or something like that. And then me, like my family, we would have our own little one, but it would be a tiny, like it'd be like a Nerf gun or something
like that. An abacus? What the fuck?
And I'd be like, why does Santa fucking hate me? What did I do? I'm being so bad on base, and the captain's kid's a little pussy. He's probably not doing anything.
One other thing, real quick. The newest trailer for Top Gun came out today. It was pretty awesome. Can't wait to see that this summer.
Hell yeah. Sound the retreat.